The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Home. And whereas this therapeutic garden was a community project involving many groups such as individuals, horticultural therapist Janice Morrison, Northside Kiwanis Golden Kay, the Northside Community Guest Home and its foundation, the North Sydney Garden Club, CBRM, students of Monroe Academy, and New Horizons. And whereas residents of the home, walkers, and families can enjoy this partnership and caring for years to come along the walking track next to the Northside Community Guest Home, showcasing Monroe Park. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly congratulate this community effort and the many volunteers that made Young Shoots Deep Roots Garden a reality. And Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favour of the motion please say aye. Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring no more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. Time is now 12:37. We'll conclude at 1:37. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we now know that Nova Scotia lost another 8,700 jobs in the past year, and I'll table the report that shows that. Mr. Speaker, that's 8,700 jobs less this September than a year ago September. September is interesting, Mr. Speaker, because that is the same month that the government announced a ban on new ways to create new jobs in our province. Shale gas development estimated to create at least 1,500 new jobs. My question to the Premier, what does the Premier have to say to those 8,700 Nova Scotians who lost their job and wonder why he is saying no to new ones?
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to tell all members of this House that there is no ban on creating jobs in this province, Mr. Speaker. The private sector will continue to drive economic growth in this province, and this government will do everything we can to support them.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as all Nova Scotians know, there is one new way to create real new jobs, possibly 1,500 new jobs, and there is a bill before this House by the Liberal government to ban that one new way of creating new jobs, Mr. Speaker. Last year, Mr. Speaker, Cape Breton lost 3,100 jobs. In the North Shore of Nova Scotia, the number is 2,900 fewer jobs. Even in Halifax, Mr. Speaker, 1,400 fewer jobs from September 2013 to this September 2014, a consistent trend over the past year. Meanwhile, the government has found a way to ban one of the few new ways of creating new jobs in our province. My question to the Premier is, how can he justify banning a new way of creating jobs when so many job losses keep piling up?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to again tell this House this province has not banned opportunity in this province. As a matter of fact, we're going to continue to work with private sector to provide good economic opportunities in this province, good jobs in this province, Mr. Speaker. And I want to remind all members of this House that it is the private sector that will drive job growth.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it is the private sector that creates jobs, but they can't do that when they have a government that actually bans new ways of creating new jobs. Premier might say that they're working on a jobs plan, but that's cold comfort to the 8,700 Nova Scotians who went backwards and lost their jobs in the past year, Mr. Speaker. What's ironic is the country as a whole, Canada, gained 150,000 jobs in the past year, while Nova Scotia lost 8,700. Canada's labour force increased by 123,000 people, Mr. Speaker, while Nova Scotia's went backward by 8,700. The country is growing, while Nova Scotia stays still, Mr. Speaker. What we do have is a government that bans new ways of creating jobs while the rest of the country goes ahead. So my question to the Premier is, how many job losses in Nova Scotia will it take before he stops saying no to one of the few new ways to create jobs?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank all members of the private sector who are believing in this province, despite what the Leader of the Conservative Party says, who are making investments in their businesses and their communities. I want to thank them for joining partnership with the province to increase the number of apprenticeship opportunities to keep young people home. I want to thank them for providing research opportunities for young Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, right here at home that used to happen. We used to drive them to other provinces to do that opportunity, and now getting that chance to do it here in this province, Mr. Speaker. And I want to assure every member of the private sector that this government will continue to work with them side by side to make sure that we continue to grow this state.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is through you to the Minister of Health. Late last month, the first case of Ebola was confirmed in North America. While the risk of the general public in our province is extremely low, it is important for those responsible for our health care system and public safety to be acutely aware of what's going on outside our borders. My question, Mr. Speaker, how is the government currently screening for high-risk individuals coming into our province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. This is one of those issues that continues to be growing in concern on the minds of all Canadians, in fact, all North Americans. Here in Nova Scotia, while we don't have any direct flights from Africa, we can have, flights within Canada of those that transfer into Nova Scotia. So the first line of screening happens at the Halifax airport, and that now is taking on a greater sense of urgency. And I know that our I guess plan is like six other international airports.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Belleville, Ontario, hospital staff were able to identify and isolate an individual suspected to have Ebola within 5 minutes of their arriving at the ER. A doctor cited Ontario's updated strict infection prevention and control measures as a reason why this was handled so quickly, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, in the rare case an infected individual arrives in Nova Scotia, what protocols has the Minister put in place to ensure that they are quarantined immediately?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know our medical officer is in constant contact with colleagues and Health Canada each week. And in fact, I think that has now stepped up just because of a suspected case here in Nova Scotia. Even a suspected case will go into quarantine at the QE2. Those protocols are in place right across the country, and we here in Nova Scotia would have the same type of ability to screen somebody at the QE2.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sadly, other than family members, it is the frontline healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker, who are at most at risk when someone is diagnosed and subsequently treated for Ebola. And so my final question to the Minister is what is the Minister and his government doing to train and protect healthcare workers from threats like Ebola?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and the former Minister of Health does raise a really important point. We have seen now what has happened in the United States in dealing with a recent case, And I know that when it comes to having quarantine protocols, it is not just having the space available. It is also having staff trained to deal with it with the latest precautionary measures. And in fact, we'll have Dr. Strang providing an update on all of the measures in relation to Ebola or any other serious medical incidents.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, with 8,700 jobs lost in the last year, the government has turned its nose up on over 1,500 new jobs that could come from shale gas development. They justify this based on an 11-year-old estimate of 650 billion cubic feet of gas alone, Mr. Speaker. But the Wheeler Report itself, published just this year, estimates that the Windsor-Kennecook Basin alone contains between 17 and 69 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, 26 to 100 times more than the old numbers, Mr. Speaker, and I will table that from the Wheeler Report. But my question to the Premier, with so many potential jobs at stake, why is he trying to downgrade the onshore jobs potential?
Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we continue to work with the private sector. We continue to work with industries in all sectors to provide good opportunities in this province, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to do so.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, of course, it's great that the government wants to thank the private sector and congratulate the private sector. We all do that, Mr. Speaker. What we need is a government that actually listens to the employers of the province when they speak up and say they want the opportunity to develop this resource, Mr. Speaker. That's what's missing, actually listening to what employers in Nova Scotia, the ones that create these jobs, have to say. When Dr. Wheeler himself was asked about his estimate of the potential job creation from onshore gas, he said, and I quote, we have a nationally leading petroleum geologist who has looked at the latest mapping and evidence on potential resources in unconventional gas in the province, and they have estimated that one block alone could have 17 to 69 trillion cubic feet of gas, create well over 1,500 jobs, Mr. Speaker. Those are the words of Dr. Wheeler and his panelists, but still, the Premier says no to a new way to create new jobs in this province. So my question to the Premier is, why does he disagree with Dr. Wheeler and his expert panelists when they say this is a real chance to create jobs?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, what Mr. Wheeler said is that there needs to be more science, more study, and that's exactly what the Minister of Energy is doing through the Department of Energy, Mr. Speaker. We're going down the road to ensuring that we actually have that resource in this province, and we're going to continue to have a conversation with Nova Scotians. We're going to continue to listen to all Nova Scotians, unlike the leader of the Conservative Party, who only wants to listen to those who share his view of the world.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that is a little rich coming from a Premier that's banning one of the new ways to create jobs in this province because he doesn't agree with all of those voices out there, whether they're unemployed Nova Scotians or Nova Scotians working away or Nova Scotians that want to invest and create jobs. When they say don't ban a new way to create jobs, he is the one that only listens to people that share his point of view, Mr. Speaker, when he says no to such an obvious new way to create jobs. And we have an example in our own offshore of how this can be done right, Mr. Speaker. The Sable Offshore Energy Project was estimated at 3 trillion cubic feet when it was first discovered. It wasn't banned. It was developed. We have responsible regulations that are safe and sustainable in place and the jobs that go with it, Mr. Speaker. But this ban, let's be clear, it does the opposite. There'll be no research. There'll be no science. There'll be no drilling unless the government proposes to borrow the money and do it itself as long as there's a ban on resource development. That is why Julie Hebert, the chair of the Maritime Energy Association, wrote to the government and said announcing a ban puts a close sign on Nova Scotia's door. So my question to the Premier, who values listening, is this. Will he listen to the people who actually want to create jobs in Nova Scotia instead of putting up a closed for business sign?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, allow the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it is not closed for business. There's a lot of onshore development going on. Mr. Speaker, the estimates that the Leader of the Official Opposition talked about actually come from a 2013 study and were published and stood by then. They used the exact same data that was used by Mr. Hayes with the Wheeler Commission. They both used the same data and came to radically different conclusions, which is why they also said it's important to do the science necessary in the onshore atlas, which this government is doing. And Mr. Speaker, the reality is that Mr. Hayes and every single panelist said that hydraulic fracturing should not proceed at this time because the social license does not exist in this province at this time, and that's what this decision is about. And if these characters want to allow processes where the social licenses does not exist, then that's fine, Mr. Speaker. But this government is going to be responsible. We're going to manage our resources responsibly, and we are going to ensure that Nova Scotians are the primary beneficiaries of them.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, for the past 20 years, members of Executive Council have made their expenses available to the public on a monthly basis as directed by the guidelines for monthly reporting of ministerial expenses, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In question period last week, the minister in charge of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Office said recent FOIPOPs into his ministerial expenses for the year, along with his executive assistant and his deputy minister, were simply nothing more than a, quote, fishing expedition. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Does he agree with his minister that requesting this information is nothing more than a fishing expedition?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have the right to know how I, as Premier, my expenses are related to the role I have as Premier. I've always believed that if I spend it, I should defend it. I've said that for a very long time. My expenses are available. And I'll continue to make them available, Mr. Speaker, as long as the people of this province give me the opportunity to hold this position.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the Premier. Perhaps if the Minister had followed the guidelines, it wouldn't have been necessary to file a Freedom of Information application for his expenses. But, Mr. Speaker, it's standard practice that a department's minister is never privy to the records going out from a Freedom of Information request. But the minister stated last week, and I quote, "I got a stack of documents on my desk, which I had to review to make sure they were factual, and I'll table that answered, Mr. Speaker." So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier explain if it's now going to be the practice of his government, when a department is FOIPOP, that the minister and not the FOIPOP administrator will review what information will be provided?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. We will respect, Mr. Speaker, the FOIPOP officer of this province, and we will do as every previous government has done, Mr. Speaker, and ensure that the information that is required is made available.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that wasn't my question, but nevertheless, my final question is to the minister responsible for the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Office, Mr. Speaker. In question period, Mr. Speaker, the minister said he had to review his expense claim for the last year to ensure their accuracy. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is really quite simple, and it is this. Why was he reviewing his expense claim for accuracy after he received a FOIPOP request instead of at the time when he filed these expense claims?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, I can assure the member opposite that all of my expense claims are reviewed by me and signed off by me. The reason that I would review a FOIPOP request, which is specifically on my expense reports, is very simple. There have been mistakes made by other FOIPOP requests. We had one where previous minister's expenses were accidentally handed out as the current minister's expense, and I was just ensuring the same wasn't going to happen. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Premier. Less than a month ago, a proclamation was issued by the Premier declaring September 22nd to September 28th the Right to Know Week in Nova Scotia. And according to the proclamation, the government of Nova Scotia has adopted the principles of openness, transparency, and accountability. Last week, and I'll table that, last week we asked the Premier to make the FOIPOP review officer independent of government. And he said, I'll quote, I don't see any reason for it, and I can table that too. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is, when he made September 22nd to the 28th the Right to Know Week, did he in fact mean only that week?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I really do appreciate the question. It shows how desperate that party is, Mr. Speaker. It clearly shows why Nova Scotians are turning away from them, Mr. Speaker. But my point, Mr. Speaker, we will continue to respect the FOIPOP officers, Mr. Speaker. We will continue to provide the information that I'm sure the FOIPOP officers will give all Nova Scotians that they request.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, our caucus revealed we received a FOIPOP fee estimate of almost $15,000 from the Economic and Rural Development Department in response to a request for information about the Nova Star Ferry. The Chronicle Herald reported that they made a fairly similar request and received a fee estimate of $175. And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that. My question today is, can the Premier explain such a startling discrepancy?
The Honourable Premier.
The FOIPOP officers have independence, Mr. Speaker. What more do they want?
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Well, I think, Mr. Speaker, the issue is that's maybe being called into a bit of question here today. So between the comments of the Premier's comments today and his comments last week that he's too busy to take Freedom of Information requests seriously, the Minister of Internal Services glib remarks in question period last week, and the overwhelmingly large discrepancy in fee estimates and a multitude of other issues associated with access to information in this province, Nova Scotians are rightly concerned. So my question is, when will the Premier finally take Nova Scotians' concerns about access to information seriously and start by making the FOIPOP Review Commissioner an officer of the Legislature independent of his government? Will he do that, yes or no?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I said, Mr. Speaker, is that as a government, we were dealing with the issues that Nova Scotians are bringing to us, Mr. Speaker, the ones that matter to them and their families and communities across this province, Mr. Speaker. Outside of the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, no one brings up the FOIPOP officer to the Premier on traveling.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, is through you to the Minister of Health. We've heard many different positions coming from this minister in regards to his stance on collaborative emergency centres, especially the one announced for Lunenburg. In May of this year, the minister told SoSure News Now that the CEC version is what is looking like what will best serve Lunenburg, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. My question through you to the minister, does the minister still feel the CEC model is what will best serve people in the Lunenburg area?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. We know that the current model needs some change in Lunenburg to deal with hours of closure. And we are awaiting Mary Jane Hampton's report before we put a final model in place, along with going to Lunenburg to meet with medical staff and clinicians at Fisherman's Memorial.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it was another story when my colleague asked the Minister about the Lunenburg CEC in question period. He suggested that he was leaning towards a family practice offering instead of the proven collaborative emergency centre model, and I will table that. Thank you. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is, why does he keep changing his mind?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As we all know, those who are following the CEC development, there are different versions that in fact, have already been put in place across Nova Scotia. We have some with an advanced care paramedic. We have the vast number, however, are primary care paramedics. We have some shortened hours in some locations. We are talking about a family practice concept that, in fact, would be part of a CEC model going forward as soon as we get the report from Mary Jane Hampton.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
I thank the Minister for his answer, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, not only is the Minister backpedaling on opening the Lunenburg CEC, but he also told us last week that he was looking at the family practice model as opposed to keeping their emergency room open. My question through you, when is the Minister planning to close the ER at Fisherman's Memorial Hospital?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I can assure the member opposite and all the good people of Lunenburg and area that we will not be closing the emergency department at Fisherman's Memorial.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act. Mr. Speaker, we have all, I think, in this legislature been in agreement, though it seems usually it's when we're in opposition. That the Freedom of Information Officer should be someone who is independent. And the Premier has just stated that there's a feeling that that position is independent. But the reality, Mr. Speaker, is that we have a recent request from our caucus office going into government, a response that the bill is almost $15,000 to supply the information, and a similar request made by the Chronicle Herald, and the price of that request is $175. So, Mr. Speaker, and the member from Richmond says, have I seen them both? I'd like to see them both. But I'm going to tell you this, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to tell you this. Wouldn't it make sense, and I'll let the minister answer, wouldn't it make sense for it to be an independent person reporting to this legislature so that we could all trust, whether we're in government or whether we're in opposition, that the freedom of information process is integrity, has integrity?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, I can assure all members of this House and all Nova Scotians that the Freedom of Information person within all our departments is independent of government. If the member from across the aisle would like me to look into why his request, his party's request, was $15,000, I can do so. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
But, Mr. Speaker, I think, again, having it an independent officer of the legislature would create a great deal more trust by opposition parties. And I'm going to table documents, Mr. Speaker, that show even government members had concerns about this process in the past, and they're in opposition. So, Mr. Speaker, I know the minister himself, when he was questioned about his own expenses, he had reviewed them. I think that's something all of us would want to do. But the point is, Mr. Speaker, we shouldn't be part of that. And I don't think the minister is supposed to be part of that review process. It should be independent. And perhaps the department made a mistake, Mr. Speaker, and made the minister aware that the request has come in. But doesn't this highlight the reason why freedom of information requests should be managed by an independent officer of this legislature?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, the reason the freedom of information is independent of government, which it is, for example, I'll give you the request that the Conservatives are talking about, $15,000, I have no clue about it. But the request that was done for my expense reports, I was made aware of because it was an actual specific request to my expense reports. And I did review them, and actually what I did find in there was a dinner that was not on my expense reports, and it was actually an expense report from further back to the tune of a couple hundred dollars. Surprised me by quite a bit because I had never eaten at Don Maurizio's and expensed it to the government. So I'm very grateful that I did look up the expense reports that were about to go out because they were not factual. I know everything I've expensed to government. I know that the total of it's only a couple hundred dollars, and when I saw one dinner for a couple hundred dollars in there, I knew it was a mistake and it did not go out as factually wrong. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness in his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think this is giving Nova Scotians more confidence about how this system is run. And we know that it's not just political parties that make these requests. Nova Scotians make these requests as well. I know we all do expenses in this legislature. I don't know about the rest of you, but I know it's a bit of a pain sometimes. To say the least, but it's we have to be accountable because it's not our money, it's Nova Scotians' money. And Mr. Speaker, I think we owe it to Nova Scotians. That's why we've taken this position in opposition, but we're also willing to stand by it should we form a government. So, Mr. Speaker, we have members of the government revealing that they are able to review their own expenses for accuracy prior to those expenses being released, and we have different fees being charged for the same question. For the same requests. So how many more examples do we need of this, Mr. Speaker, before the government will accept that we should all be supportive of having an independent officer of the legislature responsible for freedom of information requests?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, as I've stated before, the officers are already currently independent. Mr. Speaker, I will also follow up with, if I am going to be FOIPOPed, I will look at what is the request, and I will ensure that it is 100% accurate, and I will also ensure that every part of the request is answered completely and factually. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage. Mr. Speaker, preserving the mystery of Oak Island also simultaneously protects future tourism opportunities for the South Shore region. I raised the issue with the minister in person and in question period last April and introduced a bill in the spring session that called on an archaeologist to be present during exploration. Now I've received a copy of a letter from the minister, which I thank him for, and I will table that. That was sent to the individuals removing items from Oak Island dated August 2014. The letter acknowledges valuable items are being removed from the site and suggests they have an archaeologist present. My question, Mr. Speaker, through you to the minister is, with all the evidence that warrants an archaeologist being present to monitor all future work, why has the minister only suggested an archaeologist be present instead of making it mandatory?
The Honourable Minister for Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've stated, Mr. Speaker, in the past, that the Special Places Protection Act is working. It is doing what it is intended to do. I say that because the licensees who are working on Oak Island have cooperated with us. They have been sending in artifacts and the items that have been of some interest to the province. That being said, I do not have any other control on that particular site. That goes to the Minister of Natural Resources because it's the Oak Island Treasures Act. I am responsible for the Special Places of Protection Act. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's the issue at hand, is that we don't know for sure if all the items are coming to our province. We have no mandatory archaeologist on site to be able to preserve and handle them properly. And as mentioned, Mr. Speaker, there is still no on-site monitoring on Oak Island, despite the fact that the exploration continues. The island's artifacts are not protected by either the Treasure Trove Act or the Protected Places Act. Mr. Speaker, nearly 5 months have gone by since I raised this issue with the minister. An archaeologist should already be mandatory and appointed by the government. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is why was an archaeologist not hired this summer when it was clear that it was needed?
The Honourable Minister for Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Archaeologist was suggested by my department. It is incumbent upon the licensees, if they are going to have an archaeologist on set, to hire one. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the Minister's answer. That's the issue here, Mr. Speaker, is that it should be mandatory. There is absolutely no protection, and I know that I spoke to one of the treasure hunters last year and asked if they had the professional skills of an archaeologist, and they said no. And so just a suggestion and not making mandatory is the issue. And the proposed Oak Island Bill 68 would actually define, and here's another issue, Mr. Speaker, the difference between a treasure and a historical artifact. That is the problem, and it would actually place those definitions under the Special Places Protection Act. So my question to the minister is, why is the minister not bringing forward legislation to ensure all historical artifacts on Oak Island are protected and won't leave our province forever?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
As I've said, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, the licensees have been cooperating. That does not give me any reason to want to enforce, as I said, first of all, I cannot enforce an archaeologist being on site. That is with the Department of Natural Resources. The license goes under them. In terms of everything else and under the Special Places Protection Act, everything is being covered. The Act is doing what it should do, and as I've mentioned to the member opposite, we will sit down and talk to her later on today to talk about some of the concerns that she has with that particular act. As I've said, the licensees are cooperating. They have given me no reason to want to try to enforce anything on them with regards to the Special Places Protection Act. Everything else is under the Oak Island Treasures Act. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act. Mr. Speaker, the Minister just stated that it sounded like he had changed his, and I'll ask the Minister, did he refile his expense claim for the date that he had referenced, removing the $200 bill from the restaurant that he had referenced, Don Maurizio, I believe? The question is, did the minister, in the expenses that he referenced, did he refile the expense claim to correct the previous error that he referenced?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, there was nothing to refile. The expense wasn't mine. There was actually a piece of paper there that was from a previous expense from the previous minister, predating when I was even sworn into government. It was back from the summertime, and that was the part that would not go out because it wasn't my expense, and it wasn't under my name.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, the fact that the minister is involved in the process where he controlled the information that went out, and in this case, we give the minister the benefit of the doubt, it was correct. But, you know, it's funny, Mr. Speaker, the government finds this unbelievable, yet in opposition, they found it unbelievable that we didn't have an independent Freedom of Information officer. So my question to the minister, doesn't this highlight the problem with the process, the fact that the minister had a chance to examine the documents before they went out and made a change to what the officer was going to send out in reply to the request for Freedom of Information?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, this shows the process is working. There was no change done because the actual information that was by accident put in there was not part of the request. Why am I going to reveal what the previous minister had spent when that wasn't the request? If the opposition would like to know what the previous government was spending and their ministers, they can FOIPOP that too.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to agree to disagree. I think what this brings into question is what other pieces of information are being reviewed before packages are sent out to people who request information. Not just us, but Nova Scotians are making these requests too from time to time. So how can he address that point that still within this process, ministers are reviewing the information before it goes out to the public?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, I review no information that goes out other than what pertains directly to me, which is my own expense reports. And that is why when the opposition had FOIPOPed the Nova Star Ferry, I knew nothing about it. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Emergency Room Accountability Report was released late last week. In the report, the Nova Scotians learned that emergency rooms were closed unexpectedly in our province for the equivalent of 216 days and nights last year. So my question to the minister, does the minister think that Nova Scotians were well served if ERs were closed for the equivalent of 7 months last year?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm wondering, first of all, if that's the 7 months that the former minister was occupying the office, because the year, of course, that the statistics speak to are 2013-2014. That is an unacceptable number of hours that our ERs have been closed. Many, fortunately, are scheduled hours. And also, as the former minister also realizes, there are the unexpected and the anomalies that show up in that report.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My apologies to the member for Sackville-Cobequid as well. As I mentioned, ERs in Nova Scotia were closed for 5,200 hours or 216 days or 7.2 months last year. Cape Breton emergency rooms accounted for 72% of those closures. That's 156 nights and days, or that's 5 months. So my question to the minister, why is the minister allowing access to emergency in Cape Breton to be far below the standard for the rest of the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and perhaps some of the closure can be attributed to the way in which politics interfered with Dr. Ross's work, and I can assure the member opposite that won't happen with this government.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I guess we'll have to watch that one as time goes on, but we know that three hospitals in the province have established regular hours of operation for the ERs are less than 24. You want to ask a question too? I mean, really? I mean, I'll ask later if she wants to rewrite them, but there you go. So I'll start again. Three hospitals in the province have established regular hours of operations for the ERs at less than 24/7. One of the facilities was New Waterford Consolidated Hospital. For the reasons for not providing overnight care include core staffing nurse issues and instability from the public's perspective of when the emergency room would be open and the difficulty meeting the needs of the community in which the facility was located. With so many unscheduled closures in Cape Breton, surely those facilities are facing more challenges. So how many more emergency rooms in Cape Breton is the minister going to move to scheduled hours of closure, and how many Cape Breton communities will lose their overnight emergency hours, maybe like Glace Bay?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and the member for Argyle, Shelburne, Barrington, has asked a very, very important question. And we know that the Cape Breton numbers are certainly not acceptable. I believe the new CEC model for New Waterford, with the component of an ambulance with an advanced care paramedic and nurse, is starting to, I think, deliver very, very strong results. However, in relation to all three hospitals and what the future will look like, I've already conferred with Dr. Ross on what should be the model for the future. And as soon as the fall session ends, along with the deputy minister and Dr. Ross's input, we will take a look at what is best for Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is also to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the Northside General is a dire attention in this government. Frequent ER closures, overcrowding, diminishing services are taking its toll on the residents of the Northside. Dr. Amanda Woodhouse spoke out about the problems facing the hospital and said the latest cut to lab services is another in a long list that could lead to the death of the Northside General. Dr. Woodhouse cites short staffing in lab services, along with the installation of new blood testing machines, that she indicates will increase costs and reduce the number of tests. It's a serious problem. And Mr. Speaker, I'll table that document. So my question to the Minister is, why is the Minister allowing important lab services to be depleted at this hospital?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that Northside has been experiencing a number of issues over the last number of months. We also know that there is a new model of care in regards to diagnostic work. Some of that is taking place right across the province. The hope is obviously that it doesn't impact on good diagnostic work nor on staffing levels. And that will be one of the issues when we visit Cape Breton in November.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as stated earlier, the Northside General Hospital has the second highest ER closures in the past year. The hospital has lost its maternity and pediatric wards, its intermediate critical care unit, and very soon lab services will be impacted, which will then affect the surgical unit. On top of that, there's overcrowding and understaffing. 20 doctors signed a letter to the minister last week outlining their concerns and about what is happening in this hospital. Has the minister responded to the doctors? And will he table his response to the House this week?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. That correspondence has not come forward at this point, but I thank the member for raising an area that has multiple concerns, and I know several of them can be addressed and will be addressed, and I look forward to a full exploration of Northside.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount, on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the people of Cape Breton, especially the people on the Northside, feel they deserve better than this. The hospital services a huge population, and healthcare needs to be available when they need it. With all the problems plaguing the hospital, Dr. Woodhouse says our biggest concern is that at what point do we start compromising patient safety, and are we already on that slippery slope? This is coming from a doctor on the front lines of our healthcare system. This is unacceptable, and the government must take action. So my question to the minister is, why has the minister allowed patient safety at the Northside General to be put in jeopardy, and what urgent action will he take right now to help remedy this situation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for bringing forth that issue. That, as we all know, is great up-to-date information. And I will certainly respond to the doctors and clinicians who have raised issues. And when I go to Cape Breton in November, I will certainly ask the member opposite to be part of those meetings as well.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to return to a question and answer I got from the Minister on a previous question. Just for some clarification, can the Minister of Health clarify in his response that he gave me that there was a suspected case of Ebola here in our province? Was that a correct comment from the Minister of Health?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I certainly made no reference to a suspected case. I know there was a little bit of wonderment maybe earlier today, but I do have confirmation that there is no suspected case in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
I thank the Minister for that clarification, because it wasn't clear when you answered a previous question. One of the things I would like to know is to ensure that Nova Scotians are protected is what steps are currently happening at the airport in Halifax, and what involvement did the minister have with our federal counterparts to ensure that there's the proper procedures in place at the airport today, Mr. Speaker, for the pre-screening of suspected Ebola cases?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this is an area that I have been referring to Dr. Strang, Chief Medical Officer. This is his area of expertise. He's in constant contact with national protocols that are being developed. We know that at airports there has been an additional stage of requirement now for anybody that has had any contact with these West African nations. I hope to get an update, in fact, later today from Dr. Strang on what is taking place, and I believe he's also presenting some additional information to the media today.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, Mr. Speaker, we know the impact Ebola has on an individual and their families, but more importantly on healthcare workers. So I'm wondering if the Minister could confirm if there's has been any alerts given out to all the hospitals and healthcare workers, paramedics, frontline healthcare individuals, men and women who might find themselves in contact with someone who might be able to get through the screening process, because it's not a fail-safe test, Mr. Speaker. So I wonder if the Minister could confirm that has taken place.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, the member opposite raises a great point, because we know that there can be many different entry points into the province. And, there's certainly at the present time, all information has been going out to the medical community on what to look for. But obviously, contact with people from the West African nations or having visited there is, in fact, the primary question that is being asked. And later today, Dr. Strang will give additional information on the issue.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Saskatchewan are the most recent provinces to become part of the National Securities Regulator System. Concerns with the provincial system of securities regulation has led to repeated calls for a complete national security system in Canada. So my question today for the Minister is Nova Scotia considering becoming part of the National Security Regulator System?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. This is certainly a topical issue and one that we're very interested in. We have not closed the door on any steps to join in the current movement towards a National Securities Regulator, but at this time, we have not made any commitment to do so.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A national securities regulatory system will provide better and more consistent protection for investors across Canada. It will also provide improved regulatory and criminal enforcement to better fight securities-related crime. Faster policy responses are expected from emerging market trends with a single national regulator. So my question for the Minister is, does the Minister not agree that there are many benefits to a national regulatory system?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this is certainly an issue that I've taken a lot of time to look into and to learn more about. I've held more recently in June a roundtable with about 20 people that were stakeholders of the Securities Commission, both large employers and CDIFs and lawyers that use the Securities Commission. They're very satisfied with the service that they get, the personalized service, the availability of a quick turnaround for their questions and needs, and overall very happy with the current system. And I would also say that the passport system that's been in place for the last 10 years has provided great coordination between all provinces. It's greatly changed the whole dialogue on what was previously a disconnected system. That's not the case anymore. And I do not believe that we have a system that is any way inferior to what the opposition is suggesting.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are many benefits to a national system for both investors and for companies that are looking to raise money. So I appreciate that the minister hasn't closed the door, and I appreciate that the minister is doing some work on that issue. And I wonder if the minister can tell this House when her department will come to a decision on whether to join on with the national system or not.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I said, this is an issue that I've spent time on, that we have discussions on regularly. I would mention to the member opposite, and I'm sure he knows, and all members of the House should know, that we receive about $15 million a year in revenue from having our own Nova Scotia Securities Commission. And that's very significant at this point in time. So at this point in time, we need to look, Mr. Speaker, at whether or not there are our benefits to joining into the national system, and we have to weigh that against the cost of lost revenue in the future. And that's a big part of it. We certainly have the door open. We're having discussions at a number of levels, both staff level and political levels. So we have not closed the door on that, and we are certainly going to look at what's best for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think this is my question. No one wrote it for me. Last week, the minister was asked about the province's plan to design a more supportive and consistent plan around at-home medications for cancer care, or rather than going through the intravenous system for chemotherapy. He indicated the department was looking into it and would have an update soon. We know the challenge for many of the loved ones that we have that have to go through chemotherapy or cancer treatment, and we know the time it takes, of course, to be at the hospital and go through that, as many of us have gone through, or spend a lot of time with my mom when she was getting her services. So now that the minister has had a little bit of time to consult, so I'm hoping he had a little bit of time to ask that question back to his department, can he provide us with any more information on which direction his department is planning on taking?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I sincerely thank the member for bringing this question forward. It's always a very, very difficult time when any citizen of our province is informed of a cancer diagnosis, and even more concerning if they're not on an insurance program, seniors, pharmacare, or private insurance that will look after paying for oral cancer medication. So it is one now that the department is taking a look at, and get some kind of a determination on how it can be addressed. We know that it's very unfortunate when a patient has to wait, perhaps in some cases, a couple of weeks before they can start their treatment, whereas if they were on IV chemotherapy, they could literally go down the hallway, or within a day or two, they would be able to start their treatment.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. The CanCertainty Coalition has been very forthcoming with information about the hardship that so many Nova Scotians face with regard to the treatment outside the hospital. And, you know, you look at it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that if you have cancer, you're picked for a certain run of chemotherapy, you're going to go into that hospital, receive that intravenously without any real question, and at a cost to the province. I mean, there is a cost to all these treatments. There's an overhead. There's space and heat and lights and nursing that goes along with this. If we had a pill and they can go home with it, you know, what better way to be able to be with your family and be at home during this very tough time of cancer treatment? So given that there's so many experts in this area with valid suggestions, will the minister guarantee that he will allow input from those experts as the department moves forward with policy changes?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, I was very surprised that this issue hadn't been brought forward. I certainly, as minister, did not know that, in fact, there wasn't a kind of coverage for IV chemo. We've already had a couple of oncologists, Mary Lou Robertson as well. We have had a very preliminary meeting with, but certainly a number of stakeholders that can provide best information, best suggestions on how to deal with this issue. is certainly part of the department's plan.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And quite honestly, this one also falls into the issue of catastrophic drug coverage because by all indication, many of these drugs are extremely expensive as they go home. But it goes to the oddity of our health system that if you're in the hospital, you get to receive all those drugs and treatments for free, supposedly. But if you go home, you have to pay for them. So we just need to find a better way to do that. Our province should be in place with modern technology to make sure that Nova Scotians receive the care that they need in the most appropriate environment. And this should be a top priority for this government and all governments across Canada. Will the minister provide a date for the completion of the cost analysis? I know that these are just getting going in his department, but can he maybe give us an idea how long that might take and when he will make that information public as soon as he has that information as well?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And it is quite an oddity, if you wish, in our system. However, we're not alone. Only provinces west of Ontario are currently covering oral cancer treatments. It is an area now that we will explore. I'm pleased to say that at the present time, about $10 million a year do go into providing oral cancer treatments for Nova Scotians. Really, the big gap is, in fact, the timeline after diagnosis that people are identified as being on some plan. There are actually, again, because of the nature of the disease, we actually have some of the pharmaceutical companies that also have a plan to support treatments. So at the present time, we're doing the exploration. We're also fortunate to be taking a look with other maritime provinces as well. After the meeting in late October with the other maritime provinces, we will be able to have some better information to inform the House and all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Sydney Whitney Pier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the 15th question of the day, Mr. Speaker. My question to you is to the Minister of Health. Would the Minister of Health be able to tell us here today what the cost of the vaccination, the HPV vaccination, for girls is to the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health, with 15 seconds.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'll have to get back to the good member opposite with that information tomorrow.
Thank you very much. The time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers have expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please call Government Motions, Resolution Number 1, House of Assembly Rules Amendment.
We'll now have Government Motions, Resolution Number 1, and we'll move over to the member for Pictou East with 20 minutes left.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's a pleasure to rise today and continue with a few words on this motion number one around House rules and House operation. I think everyone in this chamber accepts that we need to find ways for this House to operate more effectively. And in fact, we should all be doing that all the time. I know people in businesses are always looking internally and say, how can we do that a little smoother? How can we do that a little more effectively? We probably do that in our